On behalf of our beloved Gurudev, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Swami Prabhupada, and all of the inhabitants of Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir, I gratefully welcome all of you to our Sunday Satsang Festival. In the association of sincere persons who are striving for spiritual perfection, we learn how to follow in the footsteps of the great souls. Mahajano yena katha sapanta. This is the true path to real spiritual enlightenment. Today, there are many teachers, institutions who conceive of various ways to make people feel better about themselves, a more pleasing outlook to the world, and basically just feeling more peaceful and happy in life. And in order to achieve such a ideal, there are various meditative processes, gymnastic processes, philosophical ideologies, and yes, we can feel a little better about ourselves in life, a little more peaceful and happy, perhaps even more pious and moral. But that is not the nature of the soul. That is not the perfection of human life. The perfection of human life is to cleanse the heart of the false ego, which is tormenting the mind, and to realize through experience the ecstatic love within us in its relationship to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate object of everyone's love. People want world peace. And yes, through certain logical, philosophical disposition, and attaining a more peaceful state of mind, we can be more kind, more gentle, and more respectful to others. But that is not our original position. When we understand Krishna as the reservoir of all ecstatic rasas, ras bihari, we also see how every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. And thus there is spontaneously and naturally love within our hearts for everyone. Recently I was speaking to a god brother who told me a story. Just a couple weeks back, he was on an international airplane, and the persons who bought him the ticket put him in first class. Sitting next to him, just across the aisle, was a very, very world famous spiritual leader who is teaching the world peace and love and brotherhood. And this devotee was quite surprised because when the airline hostess asked veg or non-veg, he smilingly said non-veg. So he asked this very, very famous man, you know, according to the teachings that you embody, you're supposed to be nonviolent. And in order for this meat to be there, there was serious violence. A life-living creature was tortured and murdered. Bloodshed, screaming and pain. How is it that you can eat meat and talk about respect toward all living beings? And he said, well, according to our teachings, we will never kill any living entity. However, it is our duty to accept what is offered to us, whatever it is. That is actual renunciation and detachment. To accept what is offered to you, whether it's meat or not meat or anything else. And the devotee said, but you didn't accept it. You ordered it. You had a choice and you ordered it. That's not accepting like a bhikshu monk going and somebody just happens to throw some meat in your bowl. You asked for it. That was the end of the discussion. When we actually love Krishna, then we see every living being as part of Krishna. And then it is no longer just a mental imposition, but it is the nature of the heart to honor and respect with love every living being. We may not agree with our brothers and sisters. We may even have to debate and fight for the sake of Dharma. But it is never with malice or hatred. When there is love and someone is doing something that you see is bad for them and bad for the world, that love does not transform into hate or malice or envy. Rather, it manifests compassion. And we see throughout history in all the great scriptures for all time that the actual saintly persons, they were compassionate well-wishers, even for those who came to harm them. Prahlad Maharaj is an example. He was compassionate toward his father, although he absolutely disagreed with everything his father believed and stood for. Even Yudhisthira Maharaj, Duryodhana was such an envious person. But yet when Duryodhana was in a difficulty where he was about to be killed in a fight, he was apprehended and imprisoned, Yudhisthira actually went there with his brothers to protect him. He was actually his well-wisher. Similarly, Vidura. Dhritarashtra took the side of Duryodhana and caused Vidura to be driven out of his own house. He had all of his wealth, whatever there was, his family, everything was taken away. He was the brother of Dhritarashtra. He was part of the royal family. And yet he was driven out of the kingdom to live in the jungles. And the Pandavas were driven out for 12 years. But Vidura was permanently driven out. There was no time given to him. But yet, it was Vidura who came back and dedicated so much of his heart's energy to preach to Dhritarashtra when he was most in need and help him to attain the goal of life. No revenge, no malice, no envy, but love for Krishna manifests as compassion to all living entities while we're in a fallen condition. So the path which actually leads to perfection is to follow in the footsteps of the great souls. And that is why it is so important to understand the lives of the great saints. Srimad Bhagavatam is the crest jewel of all Vedic literatures. It is the cream, the essence, the culmination of all transcendental knowledge of scripture. And what do we find in Srimad Bhagavatam? Story after story after story of very, very great purified devotees of the Lord. Now, Sukadeva Goswami was a spiritual historian. He selected the stories of history that were most appropriate for human beings within the world today to understand, to contemplate, and to follow. And similarly, we find that those who are actually living in the footsteps of the great scriptures, even those persons who have walked amongst us in recent times, they live by these principles. And we must follow in their footsteps. Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, his associates, the six Goswamis. We do not find in the scriptures, we do not find in any of the lives of the great saints, just be a nice materialistic person. Be pious. Don't hurt people. Meditate and be peaceful. Give a little charity to our temple and we'll give you blessings. We do not find that. We find surrender, renunciation. We find even willingness to endure hardships for the higher purpose. And these are the people who actually were living by the highest principles of happiness. Lord Chaitanya, in Navadvip, inaugurated the Yuga Dharma, Sri Harinam Sankirtan. He was teaching such an easy and wonderful method by which we can realize the treasure of spiritual perfection within us. Because factually, real happiness is a state of consciousness. It is not a material adjustment. Because if you're actually happy, then you're happy regardless of the material arrangements around you. And if you're not actually happy within, nothing can make you really happy. It can pacify you, or entertain you, or give you some temporary experience. But when we are speaking about inner peace, We're talking about a peace that is transcendent to the environment around us. Because each and every one of us has, to some extent, some power to control our environment. But in reality, we have very, very little of such power. Whoever we are, it's not a matter of how much money or what position or political power or great intelligence. We can manipulate material nature to some extent. But ultimately, Prakriti is God's energy. And we are infinitesimal little sparks in a conditioned state, whoever we may be. And we will all be overcome. So materialistic life means trying to find happiness by just organizing and reorganizing the material nature around us in such a way that we're comfortable and nice. And in order to do that, we need money. Yes, because money is power in this world. You can buy, you can control people, you can control assets if you have money. Prahlad Maharaj said that for a materialistic person, money is the honey. It's very sweet. But that sweetness does not pacify the needs of the heart. It only agitates it. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is explained, Parama Karuna Pahundui Jana Nithai Gora Chandra. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are most merciful. And what is the nature of their mercy? As the essence of all avatars, they are giving the highest spiritual perfection by such an easy method. Just chant the holy names of Krishna. That's all. There's only one other restriction. We have to give up all sense enjoyment. Such a small thing. But you can't get around that. Now, this is very unpopular in Kali Yuga. You're not going to get millions and millions of followers if you tell them they have to give up sense gratification. But that happens to be what every saint of every religion throughout history has done, and has taught also. The Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, and the holy scriptures are not so much concerned with popularity. They're concerned with truth. And compassion means to present the truth. Most people want to hear what they want to hear. Have you ever met anyone like that? But the actual saints tell you what you need to hear. Yes, our Srila Prabhupada went to the West. And there was one yogi who never talked about regulative principles or giving up sense gratification or renunciation or surrender. He said, Swamiji, I'm just teaching nice meditation and improving people's material life and improving people's awareness so that they can do their job better and make a more happy family life. And I have so many followers and some asanas and some breathing exercises and some nice philosophy that makes you feel so good about yourself and so good about the world and like that. I'm teaching and I have so many followers. But you're teaching to surrender to Krishna and give up all sense gratification. What you're teaching is the truth. But I'm afraid to tell them this. Because who will follow me if I tell them this? But you're so great that you have followers all over the world. And you're actually telling them the truth of what the scriptures say, of what the acharyas say. Prabhupada said, well, if you know this is the truth, why are you cheating them? Prabhupada spoke the truth to him too. But this person actually loved Prabhupada for saying it. I have met him and talked to him. He loved Prabhupada because he understood. He was just so humble and pure. He was just representing the absolute truth. How to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, of the great souls. Mahajano yena katasa panta. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught this Harinam Sankirtan. And he taught that by chanting the holy names in the association of devotees, and by living according to certain natural spiritual disciplines, we become purified. Anandam buddhivaradhanam pradipadam punamritasvadanam. Gradually we begin to experience a higher taste. And it is that higher taste, that spiritual ecstasy, which gradually awakens within our heart. Not an impersonal feeling of peace, but an ecstatic awakening of our true inner love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for Krishna, and for every living being who is His child. Then sense gratification and all of these other things, just, they don't have any more interest. So Lord Chaitanya, by His compassion, by His beauty, by His philosophy, and by the power of His own holy names, He transformed the hearts of so many. But there were some people who were blaspheming Him, who were criticizing Him, who were threatening Him. Lord Chaitanya decided, I must give them love of Krishna too. He told His followers that I have came with a medicine to cure the disease, but what I find is the medicine is making the disease worse. So He decided to take sannyas, to become a sannyasi, cut His beautiful hair, leave His family, leave His home, and His most wonderful environment of Navadvip, His eternal abode. Because in those days, everyone offered their respects to sannyasis and would hear from them. So because He was the Supreme Lord, if they offered obeisances and heard from Him, they would become delivered. Even those who hated Him. So He went to Katva and accepted the renounced order of life. After taking sannyas, he was in such ecstasy. His ecstasy was that now that he had left everything of this world behind, he wanted to go to Vrindavan to worship Krishna. And on his way to Vrindavan, he began to chant a beautiful sloka from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Etam sa ashtaya paratmanishtam. I wish to cross over the ocean of material suffering by following in the footsteps of the great souls who have done so before me. By taking shelter exclusively of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, Mukunda. This particular verse is from the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, of Krishna teaching Uddhava I'd like to speak very briefly on this subject matter today. When Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he did it in spirit, not simply in form. Lord Chaitanya's taking sannyas is not just an example for people to leave home and become sannyasis. He wanted to teach us the spirit of spiritual dedication. Because after all, Krishna tells us in Gita that a sannyasi is not one who does no work or lights no fire, but a real sannyasi is one who performs his or her work in a spirit of devotion. To understand that our only object, our only goal in life, is the satisfaction of Krishna. That is the perfection of renunciation. Renunciation is not just a hard, cold, painful conception. Actually, renunciation is the sweetest, most fulfilling adventure in life, if it is done with the proper spirit. In essence, renunciation simply means this, that our only real object in life is the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. So as Lord Chaitanya, in the mood of a new sannyasi, was wandering through the forests and the fields, he was chanting this verse. Krishna was explaining to Uddhava the dangers of sense gratification. This is also explained by Sri Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam. He said, as long as we're endeavoring for sense gratification, we cannot experience spiritual truth, either by our own endeavors or by the joint endeavors with others. It simply has to be understood as a reality that we have to give up sense gratification. Now, many of you may leave, but you can't escape. If you want spiritual enlightenment, there's no way around it. Although perhaps 90% of spiritual teachers today don't make it an issue, because they want your following. They want to elevate you little somewhere. But you have to give up sense gratification. This is the teachings of Gita, of all the acharyas. Yehi samsparsha bhoga dukha jonaya evate adyanta vanta konteya nathe shuramate buddha. That the source, that all the pleasures of this world are actually the sources of suffering. So people who tell you to go on enjoying a more pious type of sense gratification, they're actually encouraging you to go on suffering, birth after birth after birth. The real medicine may be a little bitter at the beginning, but it tastes like nectar in the end. Krishna tells what tastes like nectar in the beginning is poison in the end, and what tastes like poison at the beginning is nectar at evil. But Lord Chaitanya made it so nice that it's nectar beginning and middle and end, if we're in the right association. And it gets sweeter and sweeter and sweeter as we become more spiritually attached to Krishna and detached from sense gratification. So Krishna told Uddhava that one cannot be free from the miseries of birth and death unless one gives up sense gratification. What is sense gratification? It means any pleasure outside of our service to God.
Arrivo.
Actually, devotees have so much gratification to their senses, but it's not considered sense gratification. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Gratification. It is a little difficult to understand unless one understands the science of bhakti. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Rishikena. That if we satisfy the Supreme Lord of all the senses, Krishna, it is like watering the root of the tree. We need pleasure. But what gives pleasure to Krishna? To accept what is favorable to that and to reject what is unfavorable to that. That is renunciation. When we see the beautiful form of Radha Gopinath, it's pleasing to the heart. It's actually millions of times more pleasing to see than the most beautiful Bollywood movie actress. Or even when she dances on the cinema stage. Because this pacifies the heart and awakens our spiritual love. Whereas the objects of pleasure outside of service to God simply further entangles us in the bondage of karma. And the taste of prasad. Perhaps you are wondering when the prasad will be served. Traditionally, in many ISKCON temples, the Sunday feast means prasad. A few people come to the kirtan, a few people come to the lecture, and everyone comes for prasad. That's the way it is in many places. Everything else is just introductory formalities. But the real feast begins with Sarira Avidya Jal. That's when the festival actually is inaugurated. So devotees, you will enjoy prasad. But in the proper consciousness when taking Krishna's prasad, it's not sense gratification. It's a service to Krishna to honor his remnants. And actually, the mentality of honoring prasad really should be very humble. Because it's an act of humbling yourself to take the remnants of someone. Yes? It's like being a dog. People just eat something and throw the rest to the dog, and the dog is very happy, very enthusiastic. So this is Krishna's rent. We offer it to Krishna with love and devotion, and what's left over by him, we take his remnants. So really, the concept of honoring prasad is humbling yourself before the Lord. That I'm your insignificant servant. I'm your dog. Haribo. I don't want to eat with you. I don't want to eat before you. I want to eat the leftovers from your plate, my Lord. That is Mahaprasad. And if those leftovers are eaten by another Vaishnav, then it's Mahaprasad. And that is even more sacred and precious. Yes. That was Haridas Thakur's only benediction. He asked from Krishna. Sri Krishna Chaitanya offered him any benediction. Wealth, mystic powers, liberation, elevation to the spiritual world, ecstatic bliss, anything. He only wanted one thing. In every consecutive birth I may take, let me always get the remnants of the food that have dropped from the mouth of your devotees onto their plates. Let me even be an insect or a dog outside the home of your devotees so I can get their remnants. So when we speak about honoring prasad, really what we're speaking about is actually humbling ourselves. Because yeyatamam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajam yaham. Prasad is spiritual. It will act on anybody it touches, even if they don't know it's prasad. They'll get spiritually sanctified. But the sanctification also takes place in greater abundance according to our attitude. And if we're actually honoring prasad, that means we're humbling ourselves to be the servant, the humble servant taking the remnants of the Lord. But it tastes so nice. So yes, renunciation is a very pleasing thing if it is done with the proper understanding. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is quoting this verse, and Krishna is telling Uddhava that one must give up sense gratification in order to liberate oneself from material miseries and understand real spiritual enlightenment. And the process of doing that in this age is so unpopular that people will criticize you, they will condemn you, they may spit on you, they may pass urine on you. Haribo. And they may speak harsh words toward you because you're different than them. And then Krishna told Uddhav that harsh words are so difficult to tolerate. He said that more difficult to tolerate than a flaming arrow that penetrates your chest and actually touches and pierces your heart is harsh words spoken by cruel people. But one must learn to tolerate these injustices with forgiveness and a very, very peaceful mind. And Uddhava asked, how is that possible? And Krishna gave his reply. He said he was going to tell a story, an ancient story from history. And anyone who hears this story with an attentive and submissive heart will be free from all sufferings from ever. Hare Krishna. There was a Brahmin from the province of Avanti Desh. This Avanti Brahmin was very wealthy. He had riches and opulences and power. He made his trade in commerce. He had agricultural fields. He was a trader. He was a banker. And he accumulated lots of money. But he was so attached to that money. The more he had, the more he became attached and the more he wanted. It's like fire. Greed is like fire. Lust is like fire. The more you have, the more you feed it, the hungrier it becomes. So this Brahmin, although he had so much, he wouldn't even spend it. He just kept it. He guarded it like a yaksha for his treasure. And in trying to make more and more money, he was always in anxiety. He was always in a disturbed consciousness. He was always competing with others. And he was always fearful that he would lose it. So he became quite disrespectful, negligent, and even harsh toward his own family members and friends. And they actually didn't even like him anymore. They were so much disappointed and discouraged and felt neglected by him. We get many complaints from wives about their husbands. They don't have time for me. They don't even talk to me. They don't even look at me. They're just busy making money all the time. Yes? Well, this man was like that, but in a very, very extreme way. And because of his offenses to others, gradually all the accumulation of his pious deeds became exhausted. Because it was due to previous accumulation of pious acts that he was able to make so much money. But he wasn't creating any new pious acts. He was just exhausting. It is explained just like a branch on a tree that just withers up because it's lasting for some time due to previous water that was put in it. But because there's no new good water being put in it, gradually it just withers up. And his piety just withered away. And gradually, all different forces within the environment came to plunder him. His relatives just extracted money somehow or other from him. Harivo. And then thieves came and robbed him. And then providence, the environment. There was droughts. And all of his agricultural fields were ruined. And then time itself came and created such difficulties. There was fires in his homes and in his granaries. The ordinary people and the government officials, everything around him just plundered. And he had absolutely nothing left. Arivo. When he had nothing left, his friends, his family members, everyone around completely neglected him. He was worthless. He suffered so much pain. Tears poured from his eyes. Those tears flowed so much that they actually choked him. He couldn't even talk properly. He just laid on the ground, just weeping and crying and suffering. Oh, how he suffered. The anxiety. He was tormented. Everything he gave his whole life to attain and protect was stripped away from him. He had no money. He had no friends. He had no one who cared for him or loved him. He had nothing. And all of his fame, his prestige, his distinction was gone. A man who is that detached, who loses everything. Can you imagine how he was suffering? At the very peak of his destitution and his misery, he began to contemplate his good fortune. He had nowhere else to turn except to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because in his past, he did at one time cultivate some devotion to Krishna. And when everything else was taken away, that's all that was there left. Through his lifetime of accumulation and greed, that little spark of faith was completely covered, obscured, and forgotten. But now there was nothing left. He began to pray to Krishna. the song of the Avanti Brahman. Anyone who hears it will never again be disturbed by the threefold miseries of material nature if we hear it with faith. He prayed that his great misfortune was not in the present, that he was in the state that he is now. He considered, now I am fortunate. I've lost everything. My misfortune is I wasted so many years of my life trying to accumulate that worthless rubbish.
Haribo.
Now, most people in this world, practically any other scripture of Srimad Bhagavatam would say things the other way. That he was fortunate when he had everything, and he was misfortune. His misfortune was in everything's taking away. He's laying lonely and suffering. But he was seeing it from a spiritual point of view. My great misfortune is I wasted so much of this valuable human life just under the influence of pride, envy, and greed. And my great fortune, and this is only a fortune that can come from God Himself. The demigods fulfill your material desires. But the Lord gives you what you need. He is Hari. Hari means one who steals away. Haribo. One who steals away whatever is inauspicious in your life to fill your life with all auspiciousness. Yasyahamanakrimani harishyetadhanam shanai. When the Lord wants to show favor to His devotee, He gives the devotee abundance of whatever he or she needs. But when the Lord wants to give very, very special compassion to the devotee, takes everything away. Harivo. Everything away so that the devotee is no longer under the illusion of the false ego and understands my only shelter is Krishna. And such a devotee with a very, very sincere and gracious heart cries out for Krishna's mercy.
Krishna! 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 Hare Hare! Hare Rama! Rama Rama! Hare Hare!
The fame of the famous, the virtuous qualities of the virtuous, they are all destroyed by greed. Just as a beautiful person loses all his beauty by one little trace of white leprosy. The Avanti Brahman was thinking back of his life of greed. The greedy person, in the earning of his wealth, the attachment to the wealth, the protection of the wealth, the spending of the wealth, the losing of the wealth, every aspect of the whole process brings anxiety, fear, and despair. The Avanti Brahman declared that he spent his whole life, and the whole world is spending their whole life, pursuing a place in the abode of worthlessness. What is worthlessness? Those things we accumulate and we become attached to that are not properly used in the service of the Lord. It is so rare and special to get this human birth. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur proclaims, and it is in the verse of Bhagavatam also, that even the demigods pray to take birth as human beings. Now, human beings want to be demigods, but demigods, the intelligent ones, pray to take birth as humans. Why? because it's the best birth for self-realization. The lower species of life, there's so much suffering and so much ignorance. And in the higher planets of the devatas, there's so much opulence and so much enjoyment that distracts the attention. But the human form of life is specifically designed for self-realization. It's the perfect arrangement. The Brahmin of Avanti Dev was lamenting, thinking of human society, wasting this valuable opportunity in pursuit of sense gratification and those items that actually bring so-called happiness through sense gratification. In this way, the Avanti Brahman became very much detached. He considered that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very satisfied with me. Therefore, he is putting me in a position where I can completely depend on him and him alone. He accepted sannyas. Tridandi sannyas. Tridandi sannyas is the spirit of dedicating one's body, mind, and words to the service of the Lord. Actually, sannyas is this spirit. We have seen in history there are many grihasthas with wives and children who live the actual life of sannyasis. Because their body, mind, words, and life are dedicated to the satisfaction and service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are not envious, they are not selfish. To please Mukunda is sannyas. Some people want the external appearance of sannyasi, but that's not what sannyas is about. Sannyas is an attitude. It is an internal disposition of loving service to the Supreme with our body, mind, words, and life. So he wandered through various cities, villages, and countrysides. And when people saw him, they considered him a useless, dirty beggar. Haribo. And how people abused him. People would call him nasty, horrible names. He'd be sitting on the riverbank, just about to eat the one meal a day he begged from some houses. And cruel-hearted people would come and pass urine right in his food. And then they'd spit on his head, call him nasty names, and go away. Others would take his sannyas danda. And then they'd take his begging bowl. And then they took all the clothes off his body. And they push him on the ground and spit on him and say, "You want it back? You want it back? Take it, take it." Then they pull it back. They tease him, ridicule him, steal everything from him. Some people said, "He's a thief, he's a thief." And they would tie him up with ropes and beat him. Others would beat him with sticks. Some people chained him like an animal and kept him like a pet. Hare Krishna. And such harsh, cruel words were spoken against him. People were saying, "This nasty rascal, just see, he's not a sannyasi, he's simply a cheater, a hypocrite. Because he lost all his money and his family kicked him out because he's so useless, now just to fill his belly, he's going around begging and trying to present himself as a sannyasi. Nonsense, hypocrite, cheater." This was what they were speaking and spreading all around about him. But he was happy. He was so happy. How is he happy in those circumstances? In his beautiful song, he expressed his love for Krishna. That actually, who is it that's making me suffer? And what is suffering? Everything is coming upon us by our own previous misdeeds. But the only real, the soul does not suffer, because the soul's transcendental. The soul's part of Krishna. The soul is spiritual. It cannot really be overcome by material nature. The soul doesn't suffer. And the body's not suffering because the body's dead. Haribol. And very interactions with the body and the elements of the body being punched or being pushed or being stabbed or these other things, having fever or thirst. Does the body suffer? No. The body's just dead matter, just colliding with other forms of dead matter. There's nothing to suffer. He said, the only cause of suffering is the uncontrolled mind. And what is the uncontrolled mind? The uncontrolled mind rules us like a god. When the mind comes under the influence of the false ego, what is the false ego? The false ego is when this pure spiritual consciousness of the soul begins to identify itself through the image of the mirror of the mind with the body. That is the cause of all suffering. That is the cause of all distress. It's actually not the soul that's suffering. It's not the body that's suffering. It's the false ego that's suffering. And what is the false ego? The false ego is the illusion in which the soul is identifying with the body. And he began to look around. Who is there to blame for my miseries? Why should I blame or criticize others? Is it the soul? No. The soul is transcendental. It is material nature? No. Material nature is just matter. Is it fruitive activities? Fruitive activities can't touch the eternal soul. Is it the planets? All the planets could do is just disturb things within the gross material nature. The planets just hurt each other, he says. So we have no one to blame except our own uncontrolled mind attached to the false ego. And as long as we look for excuses, as long as we criticize others, as long as we blame others for our difficulties, there's no solution. There's no way out. It's a very difficult situation. Trying to change the environment is no solution. We must change our consciousness. If you bite your own tongue, who do you blame? Do you blame the cook? Do you blame the people sitting next to you? Do you blame the prasad you're eating? No, there's no one to blame except yourself. What are you going to do? Pull out your teeth? Your teeth, it's your fault. It's part of you. Can't even blame time. Because time is the energy of the Lord and the soul is the energy of the Lord. So does the spark blame the fire for heat, for being hot? No, it's nature is hot. Similarly, the snowflake does not suffer because of cold, because it's its nature. So we're the energy of God, and time is also the energy of God. So what is the cause of all suffering and distress? It is simply this uncontrolled mind, which has been deluded by the false ego, where we are forgetful of our own natural spiritual origin, and we're identifying with the illusory conceptions of identity in this world. That is the cause of all ignorance and misery. And how to get out of that? The Avanti Brahman, he prayed that you can't get out of it by adjusting your material situations, because you'll do that birth after birth after birth after birth after birth. There's only one way out. That I shall cross over this insurmountable ocean of material nescience and suffering by following in the footsteps of the great souls of the past. And what did they do? They took shelter exclusively of the boat of the lotus feet of Mukunda. When we take shelter of Lord Krishna's lotus feet, Bhagavatam explains that his lotus feet are like a boat that carries us across the ocean. Now, materialistic people, they take shelter of the stone boats of material arrangements. Now, a stone boat might look very nice, might be very, just like the stone of our temple, it may be very nicely carved. It may be very beautiful, and there may be nice beds and air-conditioned facilities. But because it's a stone boat, it just brings you to the bottom. But the boat of the lotus feet of Krishna, they are so special that as soon as you take shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, then the whole ocean of material existence becomes reduced to the amount of water contained within the hoofprint of a small calf. It's easy to cross over. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papibhyo moksha yishami masuchaha. If we surrender to Krishna, we have nothing to fear. Krishna will relieve us of all sinful reactions. He will carry us across the ocean of material existence and give us eternal residence in his eternal loving abode of bliss. So the Avanti Brahman very gratefully endured and tolerated all difficulties by not blaming anyone else or anything else. The Avanti Brahman just endured it and understood it is all the mercy of God for my purification. It's all coming due to my own previous misdeeds. And the Lord's giving me my karmic reactions for my purification. So I shouldn't further incriminate myself in future karma by blaming others. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, some people say an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But you'll go on doing that birth after birth after birth after birth after birth. So many eyes and so many teeth. The universal form has many eyes and many teeth. There's no end to that process. The way to get out of material bondage and suffering is Trinadapi Sunechina Toror Iva Sihishnana Amani Namanadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. Humility like the straw in the street. Tolerance like tree, eager to offer all respects to others and expect no respect for oneself. In this humble state of mind, not trying to put our problems on somebody else through blame and criticism, but simply accepting my good fortune is in this situation. I can be forgiving, I can be tolerant, and I can take shelter of the Lord by crying out His holy name. This is what every great saint in history taught and how they lived. Mahajano yena gatasa panta. In this way, the Brahman of Avantideshe attained the highest spiritual perfection. He was constantly immersed in inner divine ecstasy. And his prayers are so powerful that he had the strength to deliver millions and millions and millions of people from the cycle of birth and death simply by hearing how he prayed to God. And even the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, with tears of ecstatic love and gratitude in his eyes, was off thousands and thousands of years later, was worshipping the prayer of the Avanti Brahman. That is the perfection he achieved and the perfection he was distributing to the whole world. To follow in the footsteps of the great souls. To learn the principle of servitude. Actually, to the degree we want to enjoy, we suffer. To the degree we want to serve, we eliminate all suffering. Gradually. According to our sincerity and according to our conditionings. We must have patience. We must have faith. When we read the story of Avanti Brahman, it sounds quite harsh, but actually it's very sweet. It has been relished by all the great souls of the past and present. They're trying to teach us. By hearing in the association of devotees, we develop faith in the right ideals and the right approaches to those ideals. He wasn't looking for peace. He was willing to endure any kind of difficulty. He was looking for shelter in the lotus feet of Krishna. That is our objective. That is our goal. That is our eternal nature. Not just some impersonalistic feeling of being nice and pious and peaceful. Certainly, that is a little more in the mode of goodness, so it's more pleasing than being in the rat race of material existence. You know what the problem with the rat race is? Even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat. But we don't simply want to get out of the rat race and be peaceful. That is not what the great souls of the past have taught. But taking wholehearted shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda. What does it mean to take shelter? It means to take shelter in our constitutional relationship as the eternal servant of the servant of the Lord. and in that spirit, to hear about Krishna, to serve Krishna, to teach others about Krishna, to use our words, our body, our mind for Krishna. And the ultimate shelter that the Lord provides is in His holy name. There are 9 processes of devotional service, which really are 9 processes of taking shelter of Krishna. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked Lord Chaitanya, of the 9 processes, which is most important? And Lord Chaitanya immediately replied, the chanting of the holy name. Because Krishna has descended within His name. Kali Kale Namarupe Krishna Avatar. In the age of Kali, Krishna has appeared within the holy name. Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. Other processes can give you a little peace and make your life a little better. But the holy name alone can awaken ecstatic love. Muktanamapi Siddhanam Narayana Parayana Sudurlabha Prasantatma Kotishvapi Mahamune. Real peace can only come to those persons who have taken shelter of Krishna in devotion. Not to those who attain liberation. Not to those who have attained mystic powers or heavenly acquisitions. Srila Prabhupada is so kind. Not only is he kind, but revolutionarily kind. Because he was not afraid to speak the truth. He spoke the most unpalatable truth in the most palatable way. Unpalatable because we don't like to hear this. Our whole lives are based around in ego and selfish enjoyment. He kicked out everything and taught us surrender. But with such compassion, with such love, with such philosophical, authoritative, scriptural evidence that so many people have accepted it. And yes, all of you are most fortunate that you are taking interest in this principle. But take it to heart as it is. Don't be superficial about it. Why should we waste so much of our precious time when death can come at any moment of being a devotee and still holding on to our egoistic conceptions? Still trying to prove ourselves to so many people and blame others and criticize others and hold on to our justifications for materialistic ego? What for? Why? Just let go. Like Draupadi, just let go, raise your arms and take shelter of the name of the Lord. This is Srimad Bhagavat. This is Gita. This is the highest truth. We're so fortunate that Prabhupada, he presented it as it is. And I don't see that anyone in this room looks miserable. I see effulgent, happy faces. It's like a sea of bliss just looking out at all of you. I'm so happy just to see. You're effulgent, bright-faced. Yes, many hardships are there in controlling the mind and senses and everything else. but because you're taking shelter of the Lord and His name and the association of devotees, it's a happy life. It's the most wonderful life. And it's the highest life. And this is what Prabhupada gave us. So let us be grateful. And in that spirit, perform sanctification.